Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today I'm going to talk to George Moyes. George made a micro-budget feature film in the sci-fi genre, and I have to tell you, he pulled off the amazing feat of making it work. But enough setup. Let's talk to George.
Good. I'm glad I'm here.
But I want to know, what got you to the point? Because you accomplished what so few do, which is you made a feature-length film.
Right.
That works.
Oh, well,
that's good.
Oh, well, thanks.
And I think I told you at the Q&A afterwards, I'm a big enjoyer of temporal changes and time travel.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually pulled off a time travel movie.
Well,
at the independent level.
Yes. I mean, so how did I do that?
So tell me your background that got you to the point that you could do that. Like, when did you decide to become a filmmaker?
Sure, that's a good question. Okay, so I decided when I was younger I wanted to be an actor. Okay, I was like a class clown, and I was really into comedy. I did stand-up a little bit in New York. I used to live in New York. I went to NYU.
Did you grow up in New York?
I'm from Atlanta. I grew up in Atlanta and went to NYU but always, always totally obsessed with movies. Like, I mainly think about when I'm a triplet, so I have an identical and a fraternal brother, and both my brothers and I are totally, we're all filmmakers. We've all made a movie.
Wow, that's a fascinating conception. So,
yeah.
A pair of twins with a fraternal
brother.
With
a fraternal.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Apparently, that's actually more common than, say, all identical. Although it's like you think of triplets, like they all look the same.
Yeah.
Anyway, so growing up, we were just totally obsessed with movies and would like say lines from movies that would drive our parents crazy and repeating things over and over and over. But went to film school and I did all this acting because NYU, for some dumb reason, has no connection to like the theater school.
The film program and the acting program undergrad are unrelated.
Totally have no connection to each other, which is like crazy because like both of us like really needed each other. And it's I wonder, I don't know if they still have this flaw. But anyway, so I was also interested in filmmaking. And I was like, maybe I'll be an actor and maybe I'll be like one day I'll be a big star and that will be how I'll like segue into directing. Okay.
But when you applied to NYU,
I had made a short film.
So you applied to the filmmaking program.
It was not acting.
Yeah.
It was for filmmaking.
Believe it or not, the guy who did this podcast before you went for the acting program as a backdoor into the filmmaking program.
Really?
And he worked his tail off because it was like too intense.
What's his name?
Dylan Sanford.
I'll look him up. I don't know. But anyway, so I did all this acting and I was getting, to be honest, I didn't care that much about directing when I was in NYU, which is terrible because my parents spent so much money.
You were just studying film you enjoyed film?
I just loved movies. I knew I was going to do something.
Like you were thinking, be a film critic, do this, do that?
Not a critic. Or? No, I always knew somehow I'd be involved in making them, whether it was like producing. To be honest, I didn't have a clear.
Right.
It's funny because I'm just interviewing all these assistants and I'm asking them the same thing. Like, what's the plan? What do you want? And like a lot of them don't have a good answer.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have had one.
I wouldn't have had a great answer either.
Yeah.
You know, and it honestly wasn't until right at sort of the end of film school and right afterwards when I started the sketch comedy group. I was in the sketch comedy group, and we did like a live show, and we did these film sketches. And very quickly, I don't know what clicked. It was like a few key movies, like Magnolia, the Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Something about Magnolia, I realized for the first time I was like analyzing every single shot. Like I was, for the first time I was aware that I was analyzing all the shots. I was like, okay, so he's dollying in, okay, this one, and then he's whip panning. I'd never really been consciously breaking down everything.
And he has such clear vision.
This is it. It was
his degree of vision.
It was
you
a
were
great
appreciating
one.
That there was a vision.
Yeah.
Because a lot of movies you go to and the director is just doing the job of
it. Could just be any director.
Yeah.
There's no. So yeah, that was a great one, and that movie has so much camera movement. And I was always a big fan of Scorsese and other, you know. But something about that was I'm like really paying attention to this. Like I hadn't really been paying that close attention. And then I was in the sketch group and we did these film sketches and very quickly I became just totally obsessed with filming only the film sketches. I didn't even care about the live sketches. And I had these huge fights with my best friend at the time who was in the group, who thought I was making the film sketches too visual because I wanted them to look like...
I mean, were you guys putting these sketches online or just showing them to an audience?
Some of them were online. They were... God,
I mean, was it like Kids in the Hall where there was stage sketches and film sketches?
Yeah, I guess we did show them a couple of them. See, the group broke up too quick before we even got a chance to really... There was too much drama.
An improv group that didn't stay together.
It didn't last, you know. That actually was... I fought so much with this guy about these film sketches. I was so upset that I was trying to make them great and have them be like a Terry Gilliam.
And you were basically directing
them. I was
the
director, yeah.
Yeah.
So then basically the next 10 years or so was just a slow process of like learning basically how to write screenplays, you know, mm-hmm. I wrote a bunch of scripts, you know, the first ones are really, really bad. And then, just a slow process of becoming more technical. And like, I shot like a really big short called Out, like, I don't know how many years ago, 6, 7? I don't even know. But I spent tons of money, like almost as much as Counterclockwise on a short.
Yeah.
And I did it like the right way. I had like this big crew and I spent all this money that I still owe people, by the way. And like, I felt like a real director. I went to set and I was like, this is what it's going to be like. This is what my life is going to be like. I'm on set and then we ran out of time and we didn't schedule it right. And then we wound up having to do all these like little reshoots. That was like the beginning of me learning that like all about reshoots. And we kept having doing reshoots and then the short didn't work and there were all these problems. So we had to keep fixing things. And I started to work with my brother, Walter, who's also a filmmaker and amazing editor. Anyway, in the beginning of the shoot, the first 3 days, we spent all this money and all this crew. But by the end, we had to keep getting these shots. And by the end, it was only like one cameraman that I like found on Craigslist because the original DP was gone. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm shooting shots that are going to be in the short with one guy. And they look just as good as shots. I needed a whole crew. And no one knows that this shot took one person and this shot took 30 people. So,
and we're talking exterior day, so.
Oh, no, it was like interior. No, it was all interior.
Interior.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, it was.
So you were able to get by with practical lighting and all that?
Yeah, well.
Or you had some of that? Because no, one guy is more than.
Oh, but he had some lights. He had like a couple lights. But it was, I was like.
But one talented guy equals an independent film crew.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like.
It can.
You know, but most of it was like inserts, which is typically reshoots. It was a close up of but sometimes it wasn't. And I was like, wait a minute. Why did I spend all this time and money? I trusted. I was like, well, I got to do it the right way. And then we got into some festivals, but like that did not like set my career on fire.
Right. But that was the one you finished. There was one before that you didn't
finish. I did
not
finish.
Right. So that one you finished and took the festival.
That one I finished and it turned out well and people liked it. You know what I mean? It looked good. And then I had no money. And no one, people were not like, you know, calling me off the hook to hire me or whatever. And then I was like, fuck, like so I had probably already started to write some features and I realized incorrectly at the time that I was like, well, I can't really, really commit to a feature screenplay unless everyone likes it. Of course, now I've learned that's insane. Like, no, not everyone.
You mean one
like
that you've written?
Yeah. Well, like,
everyone who reads it tells you should make this one.
Yes. And I thought, like, unless I get 100% of people to say you should make this, then this is what I had in my head.
Yeah, that's a very unfair bar.
It's just insane. I mean, I learned that.
I mean, there's people that the best film of the year.
Well, this is it. In fact, I've learned since, and my brother Walt, my creative partner, was really helpful in saying, oh, no, no, no. If the people that hate it, that's almost just as good. Because that proves that, like, if they hate it that much, then someone's going to love it that much.
Yeah, it's true. And at least it affected them.
Yeah.
The only answer you don't want is,
So then the next step was I wanted to direct something else. So, and I had been doing a lot of dating and meeting girls and I was like, what's going on in my life? And it was, you know, I was dating. So, but again, I didn't have any money, but I had become, I was always really interested in cinematography and I became one of my best friends is this guy, Thomas, who's like, knows all about computers, knows all about cinematography. He just like knows everything. He's a really smart guy. And I would bug him all the time, be like, I've been, I get American Cinematographer magazine. I've gotten that for years. So I've just been a fan of cinematography. And then when I realized I didn't have any money to hire anybody, I thought – I was probably talking to my friend Thomas. He goes, dude, why don't you just shoot it? You should just shoot the movie. And I was like, I can't do that. I don't know anything. He goes, dude, you know enough. You've been bugging me for years. Like,
right. But you've been reading up on it. But
I've been reading.
But you hadn't been practically applying
it. I hadn't, like, shot anything.
Right.
And but I was inspired by, again, like, the one guy doing the reshoots. Yeah. I'm like,
but this was also, what, 5 years ago? Longer?
More longer than that. 6-7 years ago.
Right.
So
out, but it was post-digital revolution.
Yes. So, yeah, you certainly had the ability to. But anyway, so I was like, well, I'm going to do this. So then I borrowed a camera from someone, and I did, like, lots and lots of tests for this short film, which is called The List, and which refers to the concept that girls have a list of – every girl basically has a list of guys.
The shopping list.
That are interested in them or that they like. And if you're not –
Oh, the list of guys, not the list of qualities to judge.
The list of guys that are floating around their world that they're interested in or that are giving them interest. And if you're not the number one guy, then that's when all these, like, weird dating games come in that, like, are so confusing to everyone. Like, well, she went out with me, but now she's not calling me back. I thought she liked me. It's like, you're just not the top guy.
Right. You're number four. So number four doesn't get a text till 1, 2, 3 do.
Basically, yes, exactly.
Yeah, I understand.
So I did all these tests with the help of – I asked my friend – and I knew a couple other DPs. I asked them, like, a million questions. And I was, like, really, really, really afraid that if I did shoot this, it would just look like – a student film, and it would just look bad. I was really afraid. And I did – anyway, I did many tests, and then I shot it, and it turned out, like, probably better than Out, than this other one.
Right.
And, like, everyone seemed to like it a lot more. And it, they said it in some of my –
And Out was when you blew your wad and
blew
had
my
a
wad,
huge crew.
Huge crew. And I did this for – I made the list with, like, no crew.
Did you use one of those Canon cameras or what? What
I used the – it was like a Canon. Yeah, it was like a – it was a – it only did 720p.
Right. But still, they had a great sensor that the stuff looked really good on that.
Fucking, it was like the FS – the HVX. Yeah. To,
but either way, you were using a camera that people used to consider for still photography.
Oh, no. It was
– Oh, no.
It was a camcorder.
Film. Okay, a camcorder.
It was a camcorder. It was a digital camcorder. Okay. And anyway, so I made this, and I got all this great response, and I spent a lot of time, getting, like, cool locations, and, like, I painted two sides of the walls of my apartment one color so they could be one location in the short, and then the two sides of the other wall another color to be another location.
Yeah.
And it was very elaborate, and it was like I saw it as, like, a really fun big art project.
And you took your time and did it right.
I had, like, all the time in the world.
Yeah.
So anyway,
because you would work during the day, and then this was your nights and weekends deal?
Yeah, pretty much. Or then, I mean, my work is so intermittent because I do freelance.
Right.
I've very rarely had a full-time job. Almost never do I have a full-time job.
I work for like two weeks. As a viewer and someone who sees a lot of films on the festival circuit, mm-hmm. I sometimes think there's an advantage to those weekender projects because there's so much more time to think things through.
Yeah.
You know, I see it's almost an unfair advantage.
A little bit.
But then, of course, there's other limitations that come.
Well, this is it. So, but anyway, so I did this short, and everyone seemed to like it and thought it looked good. My biggest fear didn't happen. In fact, a DP friend of mine who now is like a huge DP for TV, this girl, Lisa Wiegand, she's a huge TV DP, was like really supportive. She was like, she thought I'd hired someone else. So I was really encouraged. So anyway, after doing this, I made it for like $1,500, and like most of that went to like the sound mix.
Yeah, sure.
Or a sound guy on set. I mean, I didn't pay anybody.
Right, and you cut it at home?
I did everything. There's all these motion graphics and effects, and it's really stylized. And anyway, after that, I got all this good response, and I was like, well... people like this more than this other one.
Right.
You know what
I mean? You were almost mad that it worked?
Mad. I was just like, well, hell, like, if I can do this. So then around this time, I was collaborating with Michael Coppola, who's the star of Counterclockwise and also the co-writer and producer. And we had been – he kind of helped me with the list, the short. And then we wrote the feature, and we started writing together, and then – around this time, I was just like, okay, I gotta just like quit screwing around. I have to make a feature. Like, I'm getting, like, time is running out. I'm getting old. Like, this is just...
Yeah, and you've seen what happens when you have a well-received short, which is not a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just like, okay, like, no one's going to... I can't just wait around for someone to hand me a job. So then I thought, well... And I had... So I had one... So I wrote... Then I got... We can go to coming up with counterclockwise the idea. I called my brother, Walter, who is my creative partner and has a million ideas. And I was like, hey, this was years ago, you know, and I was like, do you have any ideas for features that I could do for like nothing, that for some cool idea that I could do for cheap? And he goes, well, I have this one idea about like, you know, this I read this Philip K. Dick short story, and it's like a guy goes through a time rift. But he doesn't go, like, far in the future. He only goes, like, 6 months, so it's not that far. And I was like, oh, never – I don't think I've seen a time travel movie where they don't go years, either forwards or back. And I was like, oh, okay. So I started to think about that, and then I just started to develop that idea. And I was like, maybe that's time travel. Like, that's, like, a fun idea that even if I made it for nothing, people could be interested in. So
yeah, and it's a genre. It's
a whole genre.
It gets you in the sci-fi world, and there's a channel devoted to that.
I love science fiction. You know, so I just developed that, and then that was ready. And then I guess I was going.
Well, you say that was ready, but let me ask you, as a fan of the film, for that script, how detailed of an outline,
or
did you have a map with all the days and different timelines?
You know what I did? Yes, I had to figure out. It's very complicated.
And like the dog moving around and him moving around. Yes, you had a lot.
I had the outline of the movie, and then I also had the outline from different characters' points of view, like the bad guys. Like, what were they doing all day?
Right.
What was like his sister doing all day? What was the main bad guy doing all day?
Right. So you knew what everyone was doing on or off screen.
Yes.
And then you were picking and choosing what was worthy of the film?
No, I mean, I had the outline, but to have it make any sense, I had to also, and I didn't like doing this, I had to figure out what other people were doing. I kind of reverse engineered it because I realized, well, what is the bad guy doing all this time? Like, does this even make sense? Like, how long it would take from then to get
to here to there? Sure.
So that was very... very complicated. I was really inspired by Time Crimes. Have you seen Time Crimes?
No.
It's this amazing Spanish time travel movie, which I really like ripped off a lot of this because it's like a great movie.
Well, you're probably selling yourself short on that when you say you ripped off, but you made the conscious decision too that the same human being can be in the same two places
with itself
in the same time.
Yes.
With himself of another time, which I like. I like the idea.
That was really fun.
Not pretending that the universe is going to explode if he sees
himself. Well,
this is
it. I mean, watching, and I watched all the time travel movies, right? And there's actually not that many. I mean, there are, but of note that, like, I mean, there's movies like The Final Countdown, this random movie with, like, Kirk Douglas and Martin Sheen, which is, like, it's okay. There's, like, Time Rider, which is, you know, I couldn't even finish that movie. But the movies that did the most fun things with the concept, time travel movies are fun because you can do shit like that, you know, and we're like, you know, like the Back to the Future movies and this movie Time Crimes, which really low budget. The guy did so much fun stuff with that concept. So that it took a long time to sort everything out. And I mean, like not fact checking, but just like checking the logic of everything. And like,
were you ever mad at yourself that why aren't I making a movie about a bunch of 20-year-olds going on dates?
Well, one of my projects that I'm working on now is that. I think I'm good at like structure. I'm less good. I'm better now at like characters and dialogue. But when Mike, so I had written all these drafts of Counterclockwise, and I was like. I went through like the entire Hollywood creative directory to like reached out to every, I did like, you know, emailed all these production companies that had anything to do with like genre sci-fi. I mean, I sent a million emails. I made all these calls. I think I also looked for agents and managers or something. Anyway, that I think I had one meeting with this guy who was one of the producers on American History X. And he was this kind of strange guy and nothing happened.
Right. But you were just trying to find someone to actually
to help
produce
me fund
for
the
you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. So you were looking for financing, experience.
Just
producer.
Like everyone else. Exactly. Yes.
Right.
And then I had this kind of epiphany in my apartment because a couple other some of my friends from NYU had made feature films, and but they had, you know, they got like hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? And then, and I suddenly thought, like, and I'm thinking about the success of The List, right, which I did for nothing, and all these people liked it, and it turned out well, and they thought looked professional. That was what I was most afraid of, as I said.
Right, so you were empowered that you can do it.
Well, I finally, so. I literally, I was like, wait a minute, they needed all that money because they don't know how to do, I'm like, I guess a lot more technical than I realized. I'm like, they needed money to get people to do the stuff that I already proved I can do. And I thought, if I just made this a feature like I made The List, I could do it. I could actually get it done.
Right, you could wear all those hats.
I could do all, it. I maybe I would kill myself doing it, but I could do, if I just did it like The List and didn't try to have it be a bigger thing, and just if I embraced that, then, yeah. Then it could work. I could do it. So anyway, so then.
And at that point, did you know that your co-writer and partner was going to be the lead actor?
Well, he wasn't even the co-writer at this point.
Oh, he wasn't yet.
I had written all these drafts, and he and I had been writing other things. And then I showed him the script, and he said, he's like, dude, it's great. It's a great story, but the characters, you know, maybe need some help. You know, because I wasn't as good then. I think I'm a lot better now. But they weren't the strongest part of the story. And he's really, really good at all that. He's great at dialogue. We'd already been writing. He's great at character and dialogue. And he goes, you know, I want to help you, you know, maybe rewrite this. And also, I want to, like, make this with you. I want to be the producer of this. And I was like, he was, like, traveling. And I was just like, I had been hoping somebody would just appear. I didn't even think it would be him. Because I was all alone. I was terrified. I'm like, I'm going to do this. I thought I might go back to Atlanta, where I'm from, and just make it in my parents' house or use my connections as a – through people. Anyway, I don't know. I didn't know how I was going to do it.
Right.
And I was really afraid. I was like, I don't know. And then he came on board, and I was like, oh, my God. And he's from L.A., and he has tons of connections. And – so he was really invaluable. And then we rewrote the script, and it became much more fun. It's like, I have like a really dark, you've seen the movie, it's like a really dark, twisted movie. And, you know, it has a dark sense of humor.
Definitely. Well, but I mean, that is, of course, something I like about it.
Well, that's great. I mean, I like that too, but you should have read the earlier draft. It was not nearly as fucked up.
And really? Okay. Oh, so it got more with his
way self. More fucked up, okay. And way more like what I...
The sensibility.
My sensibility. Like, yeah. I've been trying to, again, please all these readers.
His, too? His sensibility, too? He's so fucked the up. Two of you just let yourselves get dark and twisted.
He said on the phone, he goes, dude, I want to rewrite it with you, but we need to, like, fuck it up. We need to, like, fuck this up. And I was like, we can do that? We're allowed to do that? He goes, dude, we need to fuck it up. Dude.
So you had the instinct of being a pleaser.
Well, but actually, not that, you know, it's no, funny. But,
or just looking for consensus, whereas he gave you the courage to just to say, fuck it and do it your way.
Yes, yes.
And the way which you really want to do it.
Which is funny because in my normal life, I'm not at all like that. But it's funny that, yes, absolutely, I was for that script.
As an artist, you were actually, you were focus grouping in advance.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't even know how long you shot.
Okay, how many days did you think we shoot? Did how many days do you think we shot the movie? Just offhand. Before I said what I just said, what did you think?
2 or 3 weeks.
So just 18 days, 20 days?
Yeah, sure.
Something like that. Like your typical.
Sure, typical independent.
Okay. With reshoots, we shot, and some days we didn't shoot all day. We shot 86 days on this movie. We shot 86 days.
86 days.
86 days. If you like grouped all those,
is that like
random
3 days a week for 30 weeks?
Well, no,
or four or five.
It's like we shot about 18 days in the beginning, and that's when I really discovered the problem. And well, really, it was Walt, the editor, who discovered the problem. And he was like, dude, I don't think this is working. Like, you know, he needs to look afraid. He doesn't really look afraid.
So this was so not. I was going to use the word controlled, but it was so dependent upon your ability to shoot it yourself and your ability to – so you had the luxury to go really long
because
you weren't
– and we were the bank.
But it wasn't like the dollar symbols flashing by was – the odometer of dollars wasn't going out of control because you don't have to pay yourself all that
much. It was actually kind of this unbelievable system. And Mike, as a producer, he was the – it was crazy. I mean, like I was – the director, the DP, the camera operator, the production designer. I mean, I put up all the lights. I mean, we had one guy helping us who was also the first AC, who was actually the brother of Mike. He was one of my other really good friends. But there was nobody there. You know what I mean? Right. And like,
it was a bunch of friends making a feature.
Bunch of friends. And exactly, we call our friends in to push the dolly. And there's a lot of camera movement, so we called all our friends. If you look in the credits, I think there's like 12. I even pushed the dolly on one shot because we didn't need to focus pull for some reason, so I pushed the dolly. Anyway, so, but Walt, the editor, was like, my brother was like, dude, this isn't working, dude. He's like, you got to reshoot this. He needs to look afraid. And he voiced what I couldn't even wrap my head around yet. I was like,
yeah, well, because he had been a collaborator too. So yes. I get it.
And he's an amazing guy and was like, you got to reshoot this. And I was like devastated. I was really, really upset. And so then it was like a slow process. And then I had to tell Mike and I was really afraid that he'd be mad at me. So then we started to reshoot.
Well, could you just show Mike the footage and have him assess it for himself?
That actually was what finally made him really understand. Yeah. He goes, I see what you're doing. And then, but it was still a little tough, you know what I mean? Because it took a while to like work out the kinks. And then, so we reshot maybe half the movie. And sometimes just like, there would be a scene, most of this movie, I just felt like a complete failure. I just felt like a total idiot.
So the process was really difficult.
Really painful.
Because you were doing so much yourself?
So much myself, and it was all on me, and I was just, you know, I'm worried it's
going
to look bad.
So you weren't going, your head wasn't hitting the pillow at night going, I'm doing exactly what I'm doing. Because it could have been. Maybe the next one will be like, that's exactly how I wanted the day to go.
No, I'm always nervous. I mean, it's encouraging to hear really successful directors still say that. I'm like, okay, maybe one day if I even get anywhere near there, maybe it doesn't end. Or maybe I should just embrace this. But no, it was constant failure the whole time. And then we kept reshooting and everything got a little better and a little better and a little better. And it was always better. And then after a while, and then Mike, finally we got in sync. And then you saw what is in the movie. And actually, when we finally got in sync, that actually became kind of great because we were like Mike and I paid for this movie. We're the bank. And if we want, and he's the lead actor. So if we wanted to shoot, some days we'd feel tired after 7-8 hours. He goes, let's just stop.
Yeah.
I'm like, in the beginning, I felt like we had to make this like a normal movie. And he was really great with being like, why, dude? This isn't a normal movie. Like we can do whatever we want. We're the bank. So like, one day we'd go, the only thing we'd shoot is him, like, we'd steal a shot of him on the subway, going down into the subway.
Right. One run down the sidewalk, and you're like, you know what? That's what we can do for the day.
Pretty much, you know what I mean? Yeah. So if you grouped all the days, all the hours together, and you made them, like, full shooting days, like a normal shooting day, we probably shot 50-something days. Yeah, but that's a lot.
But you're also taking out company moves in those days, too.
That's true. That's a good point. You know, a good point. But when we got in the groove, it was really peaceful and I could really just kind of be in the moment and just focus on setting up. I mean, I'm setting up all the shots. I did all the stuff. There's no one helping me.
Yeah. You didn't even have a gaffer.
No, yeah. It's like, I always wound up like on the ground. There's a lot of low angle shots. And like we use my wallet to prop up like the camera. I don't know how many. My wallet plus like other credit cards. And there's a lot of shots. And then that's the other thing that was great was I did lots and lots of takes. In the beginning to try when we were still figuring out the performance so Mike could look appropriately afraid. Then once he nailed it, it was like 2-3 takes, right? But also some of the shots are really complicated. And there's all this movement and some go on a long time. And there's like different – there's like 4 different camera movements and focus pulls. So some shots we do like 30 takes just for the camera –
Yeah, playing it safe in the editing room, or also just to get a single shot,
just
right?
Just because I'm crazy and anal, and I wanted to.
But also to give you the option of not cutting, or
Well, yes. I mean, some of the shots I didn't. I knew I was like, this is going to be one shot,
right? And
that's, so and that's, yeah, yes. That's so that's true. Yeah. Some of them were like the opening shot is like, I think it has like five or six different moves, reframings. Yeah, I mean, we were so relieved when. People started to see the movie, and mainly that his performance worked, and that because it was in a different movie in the first round
in the beginning
first 18 oh my god, so tough, really tough. And then we ran out of money, and then we had to like then he had to go on the road. He had this job where he had to go on the road and do promotions. He was like a tour manager, so he would be gone for like 3 weeks, and then we had this studio in Canoga Park where we shot most of the movie, and it was like our little soundstage. And then, but because we weren't done shooting, we had to hang on to it, and we had all this crap there. So yeah.
Just one of those little like mini warehouses in Canoga Park, like you could ship trophies out of it, or you could
And people had the like little. Businesses.
Yeah, I know. Industrial Park, yeah.
I mean, but that was like, and then, I mean, Canoga Park's way out there. You know, actually, you're not so far from Canoga Park.
No, it's like 20 minutes.
For me, it's like 40, 50 minutes.
Canoga Park, the home of the porn industry.
Yeah. But I mean, like, they don't give a damn what you do there. Like, we shot all the stuff on the street, like, all the stuff on, like, sidewalks, not even, like, right by us, like, streets and parks, and no one, we shot tons of stuff with no permits ever. We never got one permit ever.
Yeah.
So that was kind of great. I mean, we could just do. It was like our little like back lot. No one cared at all what we did. We're so far out.
Yeah, and you're not that far from Cal State Northridge, and I'm sure students from there are always doing stuff. And who's going to bother?
I guess just they didn't. Yeah. So that was great, actually, being that removed and having no oversight. We had to hold on to this location, this warehouse, for an exorbitantly long amount of time, and we wound up keeping it to shoot this one. We had shot everything but this one scene that was the one scene that didn't have any other actors in it except like the main character and like other actors that were not in any other scene in the movie. And then, of course, it's not in the movie. It's not even in
and
the movie.
And that was the last thing you shot?
The last, very, very last thing we shot. And like.
And you paid rent an extra 3-4 months to get like, that
shot? No,
A year.
And it was like, I mean, that's the.
Did you set up the editing bay out there? Or your,
oh, no, no,
your
no,
brother
no.
was doing that
and,
at home?
And his apartment. It's all. Right. He had it all at his place.
When you say it's out there. Mm-hmm. It's the distribution was online. Or
oh
was
yeah,
it?
It's yes, it's
and pay per view.
It's on iTunes, Amazon, Blu-ray, DVD, other platforms, and it's actually, you know what made me
and that release happened for you.
It was in I guess the end of last year, or was it? God, I can't remember. I think it was the end of last year. And the thing that made me feel the best was you know the are you aware of the torrents? Like people
of course.
Legally, okay. Of course I am. I know them well. So I've used them, you know, and there's one of our friends, he, like downloads stuff all the time off the torrents. And he goes, dude, I didn't even know. It was like, I think it was, the movie must have come out like December or January or something like that. I guess because a few months ago, our buddy was like, dude, your movie just came out on the torrents. But those cedars on the Pirate Bay, I was just like, oh my God. Like, holy shit. Like, I was stunned. I took a picture and put it on Facebook.
I get it.
I couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
It's the only evidence I have that, like, you know, because, like, you know, I talked to my distributor and, like, you know, it's like small movie. You know, they're still adding up the numbers. And when I saw that, I was like, holy shit. Like.
Yeah, this is what happens to a Marvel movie, and it's happening to me.
I couldn't very still surprise. I still check. It's still there. It has like 7 different versions of it.
So now that that is behind you, you can honestly say that you've moved on.
Yes.
And you're not going to tweak. You moved on. It's distributed.
Yes, out there. Thank God. I didn't think that day would ever, ever, ever come. We worked on it for years. I think 4 or 5 years. I didn't think I would ever not be working on it ever.
Yeah, and when obviously seeing it on iTunes and seeing it on Amazon is a
I mean
gotta feel great.
Yeah.
So when you look at that, so have you chosen the next thing?
Yeah.
Are you already on it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a few projects. One of them is a sort of an 80s cop movie with a film noir vibe about a corrupt cop who has to investigate a murder where he's the main suspect. So he is investigating himself. He was framed for murder, and he has to investigate himself. So he has to, like, throw people off the scent while he's, like, uncovering this, like, strange case. It's, like, set in the 80s, like a very 80s vibe, called The Smell of Night. And then I have another one called Killer from Space, which is sort of, you know, a horror sci-fi movie about an alien from outer space who comes to Earth and has the ability to take over human body. So it goes from, like, body to body, and it goes on, like, a sex murder rampage, which causes hell. And it's trying to find, like, a woman to bring back to its ship. So it's, like, interacting with all these people, but killing it, crazy. And then the only thing that can stop it is this tracker from another galaxy that comes to Earth that, like, hunting the alien. So it's almost like the Terminator meets – no one knows this movie, but have you seen The Hidden?
The one with Colin McLaughlin.
You know The Hidden?
Of course I know The Hidden.
Oh, my God. Nobody knows The Hidden. It's like The Hidden? No.
When you were describing it, I said to myself, I'm not going to mention The Hidden because that's rude to mention the movie that your movie is like.
It's totally – it's like The Hidden meets like Terminator.
I know. Is that squid thing would – or not squid. The crab – the lobster looking thing would go from mouth to mouth. But then Colin McLaughlin, he shared the light. Yeah,
The Hidden is an amazing, for all your listeners, The Hidden is an amazing, totally forgotten. I bring it up. No one knows this movie.
Oh, that movie was so
much fun.
Everyone who went to college between 86 and 90 saw that movie in college. That was the movie.
It's a really fun
that
movie.
That and They Live.
So it's, you know,
it's that era for me of not B movie sci-fi, but when Hollywood would put out the occasional. You know, genre film.
It's really fun. So, you know, other movies I like in that genre, like Species. I love Species. I've seen Species like a gazillion times. And then I have my last project that I have is, it's actually a feature version of The List, my short The List, about dating. So it's about, you know, this young guy who is obsessed, who has never had a girlfriend. It's all he wants. And... but he's clueless. So he meets an older guy who has, like, all this experience with women and agree, like, through a series of strange lessons and tasks, really helps him, like, learn about women and get better. And finally he gets what he wanted, but then he realizes it's not what he thought it would be. And he has to figure out what really makes him happy before he, like, screws up everything in his life.
Cool. And these are all, scripts.
All finished scripts. And I'm in the process of like starting over and sending it out.
And you're unwilling to repeat the process that brought us counterclockwise?
I have a backup movie. Actually, I'm going to shoot another feature at the end of this year and early next year. Like counterclockwise, but actually I want to spend even less money because I can't, because, like, you know, it's like all these movies I just described, I would need a budget, right?
Yeah.
So God knows how long that's going to take to get anyone interested and, like, get the money. I mean, I know every story of, like, this took 10 years to get made, you know, Brick took like 10 years to get made or something. Anyway, so every year I do like these weird short films with my family in Atlanta. I shoot them over Thanksgiving, and then I show them at Christmas. And over the years, as I've become a better director, cinematographer, the movies, I mean, I shot counterclockwise. I'm the DP of counterclockwise. So my skills are way better now. Anyway, there are these incredible, you should check them out. They're these incredibly experimental, really strange comedies. But they, similar to like The List, like everyone seems to like these weird shorts. And
So over Thanksgiving weekend, you grab brothers and parents, and you make them act for you?
Well, I go home for like a week or two.
A week.
I love my parents. I love going home. I go home all the time. So I go home for like almost 2 weeks, and then I come up with like some crazy story. But there are these incredibly strange experimental movies that I would think nobody would like, but all these people seem to think they have a really fun, weird tone.
And like you have a Vimeo channel where you're sharing it with the world?
YouTube. It's on my
YouTube.
My YouTube channel. They're all there. And so I thought, I got to make another feed. I can't just sit around. And now emboldened, empowered by Counterclockwise, I'm like, I mean, I could do it again. You know what I mean? So I have...
Dan, you learned so many lessons on
so many oh, my God. So now I'm going to shoot just same thing with friends and just shoot just like Counterclockwise, but spend even less money. But I think it might even look more expensive because I know all this 3D now. I know all about effects and 3D stuff I didn't know. I could like create all this stuff that would look really expensive. So, and it'll just be, and I've never made like, I made all these comedy. Everyone thinks when they meet me, they're like, why aren't you making comedies? It's not like you're a funny, why are you doing these comedies? You know, in fact, some people before Counterclockwise was made, they're like, you shouldn't make this movie. Don't do this. Good friends. And we're like, you should do comedies. You shouldn't do this. And I'm like, but I am doing this. And I love action movies, but...
Yeah, it's a genre you love, but besides that, there's humor in it.
Well, I think the movie is a comedy.
Yeah,
I think there's laughs in every scene, basically. So, but this movie would be an overt comedy, and it would... I'm going to have a blast just, like, coming up with all kinds of insane, crazy shit.
Is there anything better than finishing a podcast on a curse word? Yeah, I don't think so either. George was super fun to talk to. I have to tell you, that conversation went about an hour longer than what you got to hear, and every minute of it was informative or interesting or just plain funny. As usual, you can go to discoverfilm.net for more about this podcast, more about the filmmakers involved, more about the film festivals where they were discovered. And if you want to see George's great feature film, Counterclockwise, you can do that at iTunes or Amazon. Thanks for listening. Yeah.